Okay. Our next presenter is Nathaniel Jones. He is an Advanced Technology and Research Analyst with Arup, and he will be presenting alongside Alexei Gorin, who is a building physics leader at Arup as well.
I try.
Do you have everything set up that you need? Okay.
We'll do this in a two. Hi. We'll do this in a two-part. I'll try to give some background, and then Nathaniel will complement me on the technical side of things. So at the end of the day, I think you might understand a little bit more about what aeroacoustic noise is, if you don't already know that. But the main point really is we're trying to talk to you about a methodology of how we can quantify the risk associated with aeroacoustic noise. That's the aim of it, and it's just a starting point of something that we might develop. Those were some of the main colleagues. Rubina's actually in the room over there, that were involved in this project. It was led in the Americas, so it's more participants there, and then reviewed by our team's counterparts in London and in Sydney. That was a kind of a global effort because it was a bit of a new territory for us. Why is it important? You may have seen some of the headlines in California and other major cities as well. This conference is testament to it, that there's a drive towards more zero net energy or carbon neutral buildings and developments as a whole. And so what we start to see more of, and I'm sure you've seen it before already, is external shading devices that take any type and shape. We had worked with vertical fins before, and this problem keeps coming back now with perforated facades as well. Are we at a risk where they create noise that is affecting our building occupants, maybe residential or commercial? This is an infamous example in Manchester. If you want to play the sound. Whenever it is windy, and there's a nice anecdote to this. They're recording Coronation Street, whoever's British. It's a soap. It's rubbish, but they love it. And anyway, they even got sound engineers to try to mask the sound of this tower because it makes that sound, that hum at around 70 dB, which is actually quite noisy, to basically mask it in windy conditions. And they tried to fix it, and they can't. And so they're just letting it be for now. But this isn't the only problem, the only building. There are these structures, these high-rise buildings that seem to catch that disease sometimes. That is a high-rise building in Montevideo, and they have a perforated mesh around the helipad, and that one's making a similar sound, a tonal sound at high wind speeds. And there's a university there that's been measuring it, investigating it. We haven't talked to them, but they published some data online, so that's why we know. Okay, so in order to quantify the risk of it, right? So the first question we have to ask ourselves is, what is the mechanism behind aeroacoustic noise? Any ideas? It's the two easiest examples that I can think of is when you're driving in your car, the side view mirror is starting to make a noise in most cars at a certain speed, but before it doesn't. So it tells us two things about aeroacoustic noise. One, it's flow driven, right? Not a drum. A drum, there is no net movement of air. It's just the vibration of a membrane. So it's a pressure wave that's just being propagated. But aeroacoustic noise is actually due to the variations in the flow field. And there's a correlation to the speed, right? Which correlates somehow to frequency intuitively. And the amount of turbulence that it gets probably has something to do with the audibility of it. Another example is a Coke bottle. If I actually cut the bottom of it off, you probably won't hear a thing, but you have a reverberation chamber at the bottom that contributes, amplifies the sound. So there's different mechanisms, and then you have acoustic induced vibration. So this is when your wind's starting to move things and they go at similar frequencies because they have to have physics anyway. The second question is a risk of when does it become a problem? What if I drive my car slowly, it's not a problem. So at what point does it become a problem? This is well studied. So we're going to look at the point from when does it become audible, annoying, and obviously dangerous is dangerous, right? So somehow we have to be able to link these pieces together. So, which brings me back to the first question, how do we quantify the risk of aeroacoustic noise? Nathaniel's going to try to answer that question based on the case study.
All right, thanks, Alexei. So this is a close-up of a building that we were fortunate enough to work on. It's got these perforated screens which sort of display an image. They've got holes of different sizes in them. And our first step was just to take a look at the plans for this building. The architect had spent years designing these hole patterns, and they weren't about to let that stop being a part of the plan. But we saw these holes as something that could generate noise when the wind blew them, and so we counted them. There are over 27 million little holes on the building, which means that there are potentially 27 million loudspeakers around this building. And what we wanted to do for the developer of this building was to tell them what fraction of the year they might expect those little speakers to actually make noise. In other words, what was the risk of aeroacoustic noise at any point on the building? In order to answer that question, we need to come up with some sort of a formula which would relate a number of different factors to the sound power level coming from the building. The factors that we looked at were the hole diameter and spacing, and then the wind direction, the wind angle of incidence, and the turbulence intensity of the air at any point on that building. So in order to come up with that, there were really three steps that we had to do first. We needed to figure out what was the frequency and the strength of wind coming from any given direction. That was step one. Then step two, we had to relate to those on a regional scale to local scale what was happening on the surface of the building. That's a site-specific wind model. And then step three, we had to relate the phenomena on the surface of the building to a sound power level, to what's the volume of that sound given those environmental conditions. When we put all of those together, we can create that formula which will take us to that risk map. That's our goal. So starting with the statistical wind data, we looked at a nearby airport, got 30 years of data from that site. Of course, conditions at the airport are a little bit different from conditions in town, so we need to transpose from the airport weather data to the urban condition. We do that using a method developed by Harrison Deaves called the Engineering Science Data Unit, or ESDU assessment. What that does is it considers 12 different wind directions and the terrain within certain distances from the point that we're interested in. We do two transpositions, one to get from the airport condition to an open terrain condition, and then one to get from open terrain condition to the urban environment. So we can do that transposition for each of the 12 wind directions. And as a result, starting with the wind rows that we get at the airport, which tells us, for instance, that the wind is mainly coming from the south and is usually a certain strength, we can transpose that to the site. And on those graphs, the airport conditions are shown in blue, the site conditions are shown in green, and you can see that in the urban site, the wind speeds are lower and there is higher turbulence intensity than there is at the airport. And at the height of the building, which is about 100 meters, it's a fairly significant difference between the two locations. And those curves serve as an input to this domain that we're then going to simulate. This is showing a computational fluid dynamics, or a CFD simulation, of about a square mile of the urban environment around our building. So our building is shown there in white, the other buildings in gray. And you can see that the local buildings will do even more to shade wind from our building in certain cases, and to increase wind speeds in other locations near streets and so on. And it also changes the amount of turbulence around the building. But what we really want to know is what's happening on the building facades. So these are showing just for the south wind condition, which was our most common wind condition. The velocity of wind hitting the building, you can see that the highest velocities occur on the south facade, and also the angle of incidence. And the angle of incidence is mostly parallel to the facade, which is what you would expect, except when you get near corners and openings like balconies. And so intuitively at this point, we might expect that we're going to see our worst problems on the south facade and near edges. But we still need to quantify that just to figure out how loud that's going to be. And to do that, we did some simulations of individual architectural panels. There are really two ways we could go about this generically. One is to use a transient model, which is going to consider a time series of wind hitting the building. The other is to use a steady state model, which will average over time. And I'm going to go through the benefits of using each of those models, but one I'll point out right away, and that's in bold here, is that the transient model takes about 3 days to run, and those steady state models, which are time averages, only take 15 minutes. What the transient model does for us, which is really great, is it gives us a time series, and that lets us pull out frequencies, which are time related. So you can see there on the graph, first of all, we're showing the speed of air moving through the holes is colors on a plot of the domain of air around the panel. But then we're showing the pressure fluctuations measured at a sensor on the rear side of the panel, and you can see that there are these little fluctuations. Those are acoustic waves passing over our sensor point. And we can oralize those, and we can put them through a Fourier transform in order to pick out a frequency that's occurring. And that frequency is, I would call, something like an ee, which you could imagine could become kind of annoying. We know that's going to happen for this panel with this wind direction. And we could try out some others, but because these simulations take so long, we didn't want to do that. Instead, we used our steady-state Reynolds average Navier-Stokes model, which gives us a time average, which means that it can't account for frequency. But we can still pull out acoustic power using this formula called the Prudman broadband noise formula, which takes a number of the outputs from the steady-state model, from our CFD model, namely the turbulence kinetic energy inside each of the cells in that model, and also the eddy dissipation rate. And we can run that for a number of cases because it doesn't take so long. We can start to populate sort of a table that tells us, given a wind speed and an angle of incidence, what's the sound power that we get out of that. And you can see that for a certain case, we get up to 99 decibels. We can run these much faster, but this is just showing two of the variables that we're considering, and we're actually considering five variables, and they can take on a lot of different values on this building. There were really millions of possible combinations that we would have to consider, and we didn't want to run all those simulations again. So instead, we turned to a machine learning algorithm. This is called a polynomial regression model. We ran about 70 cases using our parametric model, calculated from CFD the sound power level for each of those cases, and then fit a second order polynomial function to the variables that we varied. And you can see here in blue we have the value that came out of our CFD simulation, in orange the prediction of our regression model for the same conditions, and generally speaking, they are very similar to each other for each of the cases we looked at. In fact, we get a fit score of 99%, which is quite good. So now we have this generic formula. It gives us a sound power level as a function of those five parameters. We got the function from our regression model. We have the hole diameter and the hole spacing from the architectural plans. We have the wind speed, the wind angle of incidence, and the turbulence intensity for each wind direction from our site CFD model. And that means that for each point in time when we know the wind direction and the wind strength, we can calculate a sound power level at any point on the building. And that's really great because it means that we can look over the course of an entire year of data and figure out how often each loudness occurs at each point in the building. So what I'm showing here is the fraction of the year where the sound can be loud enough to be audible, and then also in the other diagram, the fraction of the year where it's loud enough to be annoying, to be heard over, there's a highway not too far from the site. So when it got as loud as we expect the highway to be, that's when we consider it to be annoying. And the deepest red there is showing 5% of the year. So there's a fair amount of the building facade where you could hear noise, mostly on the south facade, mostly near edges, as we thought it might be. And there are a few places where it could be loud enough to be annoying, but really not that much. The architect was fairly happy with that. So just want to review what it is that we accomplished here. We showed that we have a multi-step process using CFD, both the urban scale and at the scale of individual facade panels, and then using regression in order to assess the risk of aeroacoustic noise at any point on a building in a given time. There is more that we could do if we wanted to run a more detailed study. We could go in and take measurements of background noise at the site, and we could consider other sources of noise, including panel vibration induced by the air movement and resonance between the facade and the panel. But just to go over some key takeaways from this, because we have that that noise prediction methodology, we can apply this to other buildings. We can do that using CFD, or alternately, instead of running CFD, we could have done this with wind tunnel data as well. But the key here is really to be able to do parametric modeling, to be able to use regression so that we can run a reasonable number of simulations that take a reasonable amount of time and then apply those to the entire building in an entire year. With that, I'd like to conclude and thank you and take questions for myself and Alexei at this point. Silence is what we like to hear. So I did have different color scales on for those two images, even though I didn't show it. So there are some differences, and the fact is that the transient and steady state models do consider some different mechanisms for the creation of acoustic noise, dipole and monopole versus quadrupole sound sources, which is something that I get into a bit in the paper if you are curious, but is something that we're still investigating how much those differences matter. And so we do have additional funding at this point that we're using to explore those differences and some other acoustic models as well to see what gives us the best agreement. All right, thank you very much.